Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States entered the Second World War in December of 1941. Europe had already been at war since 1939, but the United States did not enter World War II until Japanese forces attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The attack was a surprise, but American military and political leaders had believed that the United States, sooner or later, would be pulled into the fighting, and they began to prepare for war. President Franklin Roosevelt had been Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Woodrow Wilson during World War I. He remembered how American troops were not ready for that war. Now that he was president, Roosevelt wanted to be sure that the United States would be ready when it had to fight. Throughout 1941, Roosevelt urged American industries to produce more weapons and other military supplies. He established new government agencies to work with industry to increase arms production. Some business leaders resisted Roosevelt's efforts. They felt there was no need to produce more arms while the United States was still at peace. But many others cooperated. And by the time Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, the American economy was producing millions of guns and other weapons. Still, this was not enough to fight a war. After the Japanese attack, Roosevelt increased his demands on American industry. He called for 60,000 warplanes, 45,000 tanks, and 20,000 anti-aircraft guns. And he wanted all these within 1 year. A month after the Pearl Harbor raid, Roosevelt organized a special committee to direct military production. He created another group to help companies find men and women for defense work. And he established a new office where the nation's best scientists and engineers could work together to design new weapons. These new government organizations faced several problems. Sometimes factories produced too much of one product and not enough of another. Sometimes tools broke, and some business owners refused to accept government orders. But the weapons were produced, and American troops soon had the guns and supplies they needed. The federal government had to quickly expand its own workforce to meet war needs. Federal spending increased from $6 billion in 1940 to $89 billion in 1944. That was 15 times as much spending in just 5 years. Roosevelt had to take strong steps to get the money for all this spending. He put limits on wages. He increased income taxes to as much as 94% on portions of incomes over $200,000. And he asked the American people to lend money to the federal government. The people answered by purchasing almost $100 billion in war bonds. The great increase in public spending raised the threat of high inflation. Roosevelt created a special office with the power to control prices. Many Americans agreed with the idea of price controls, but every business wanted somebody else's prices controlled, not their own. Federal officials had to work hard to keep prices and supplies under control. They restricted how much meat, fuel, and other goods people could buy. The price control program generally worked. Its success kept the American economy strong to support the troops fighting in Europe and Asia. One reason these strong economic steps worked was because most of the American people fully supported the war effort.
She's the part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie, the riveter, keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little friend can do more than a myth can do. Rosie, the riveter, Rosie's got a boyfriend, Charlie, he's a Marine. Rosie is protecting Charlie, working overtime on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production lead, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie, the riveter.
You can look at photographs of people from those times and see in their faces how strongly they felt. In one picture from the state of North Carolina, a group of men are standing in front of old rubber tires. They are planning to give the tires to the Army to be fixed and used for military vehicles. Another photo shows a woman visiting a hospital. She is singing to a soldier to lift his spirits. Still another photo shows a man who owns a small food store. He is placing signs on meat and cans of food to tell people how much they are allowed to buy. You can also get an idea about the feelings of the times by the names of some of the popular songs during World War II.
Praise the Lord to pass the ammunition.
In addition to Rosie the Riveter, there were songs like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. One of the most hopeful songs was this one, recorded by Britain's Vera Lynn.
When the lights go on again, all over the world, and the boys are home again. World. And rain or snow is all that may fall from the skies above. A kiss won't mean goodbye.
Not all Americans supported the war. A small number refused to fight because of religious or moral beliefs. They were known as conscientious objectors. And some Americans supported Adolf Hitler and other fascists. But almost everyone else wanted to win the war quickly and return to a normal life. Many Japanese Americans served with honor in the United States Armed Forces. But many Americans were suspicious of anyone whose family had come from Japan. They refused to trust even Japanese-American families who had lived in the United States for more than a century. Many banks refused to lend money to Japanese Americans. Many stores would not sell to them. The federal government relocated thousands of Japanese Americans in California and other states into internment camps. They were released only after the war ended. It was many years before the government officially apologized for mistreating Japanese Americans. But World War II did lead to progress for another group that was often the target of discrimination, Black Americans. Black leaders spoke out. They said it was unfair to fight a war for freedom in Europe while Black Americans did not have all the same freedoms as white citizens.
Negroes want the same things that white citizens possess. All of their rights, and no force under the sun can stem and block and stop this civil rights revolution which is now underway.
In 1941, a leader in the Black community, A. Philip Randolph, threatened to lead a giant march on Washington for civil rights for Blacks. President Roosevelt reacted by issuing an order that made it a crime to deny Blacks a chance for jobs in defense industries. He also ordered the armed forces to change some of their rules that discriminated against Black service members. Blacks made progress in the military and defense industries, but most other industries still refused to give them an equal chance. Major progress on civil rights would not come until the 1950s and 60s. Life was busy during the war years. There were many changes in the economy, business, music, race relations, and other areas. But in many ways, life continued as it always does. Americans did what they could during the hard years of World War II to keep life on the home front as normal as possible. But almost everyone understood that the first job was to support the troops overseas and win the war. This strength of purpose at home gave American soldiers the support they needed, and it also helped President Roosevelt as he negotiated with other world leaders. Diplomacy and foreign relations became much more complex during the war. That will be our story next week. Our program was written by David Jarmel. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.